I'm not sure when the editors at Merriam-Webster plan to unveil their annual list of trendy new words, but I'm guessing it'll include woke. As we've all come to understand, woke is an adjective that means being attuned to issues such as discrimination, economic inequality, and climate change. How do you spell it? Well, W-O-K-E, of course, but some Republican lawmakers prefer a variant spelling, E-S-G. Hi, I'm John Schwanis. On this week's show, we'll wade into the growing debate over ESG, or environmental, social, and governance investing, which, simply put, is investing that recognizes and rewards what many Hoosiers might consider good corporate citizenship. How, if at all, does social activism fit into 21st century capitalism? Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house. As I joked a moment ago, some conservative policymakers view ESG as an alternative spelling of woke. In other words, in their eyes, even though the term, strictly speaking, comprises only three letters, it's most definitely a four-letter word. Here to examine how good corporate citizenship became such a bad or at least controversial thing are Republican Representative Ethan Manning of Logansport, chair of the House Public Policy Committee, Democratic Representative Ed Delaney of Indianapolis, assistant Democratic caucus chair, State Treasurer Daniel Elliott, a first-term Republican, and Kevin Brenniger, President and CEO of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. Thank you all for being here. Ethan Manning, start with you. Last year, you introduced legislation that would put controls on how the Indiana Public Employee Retirement Fund system could invest, and it's back this year. What is it you are trying to accomplish?
Absolutely. Well, this year, the coalition is much broader, so we're focused on fossil fuels, border security,
Firearms,
and also on agriculture.
I was going to say, he drafted an amendment to actually take anything you couldn't remember out of the bill.
That's right. So just had a Rick Perry moment there. But what we need to do is make sure that our public retirement funds are not going towards ESG investing. We need to define what ESG investing is. We need transparency and accountability when we're talking about proxy voting, when these investment managers are using our Indiana pension funds to vote proxies that are not in the best interest of Hoosier businesses and Hoosiers themselves. And then we need to push back against the sort of radical left when they're talking about these environmental policies that are harming our economy with the Green New Deal, and we need to make sure that we have the power to power our economy.
And this is near and dear to your heart again. You did it last year, failed back again this year. What is the motivation? Have constituents come to you and called you and knocked on your door and said, you know, you really got to do something about this ESG investing?
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't see it showing up on any polls, and as I say that somewhat flippantly, I don't think it's on the top concerns of a lot of Hoosiers. Mm-hmm. Maybe they don't even know what it is, but what's driving you? Is it constituent concern, or is it a national agenda? What's the work here?
Both. I've absolutely had constituents reach out to me concerned about this issue. It's become a much bigger topic of conversation over the last year. You see governors and state treasurers and legislatures in multiple states this year talking about this issue, and part of it, again, is pushing back, because the folks who are pushing ESG and trying to discriminate against certain businesses, they're not shy about what they're doing. So we need to push back and say our economy can't take this. And so we've received thousands of letters and calls and emails to our caucus supportive of this measure.
Some from Indiana even, right?
Most from Indiana.
Okay, because, this is a sort of a national talking point for certainly mm-hmm. some national groups. Mm-hmm. And we should set the stage here that a few states, Texas, West Virginia, Oklahoma have instituted such limitations, and I think I saw maybe 20 states are in the same situation
bills have been filed
as Indiana
this year
in terms of looking at this. Is it high on your, Ed Delaney, high on your list of constituent concerns?
I mean, well, I don't wake up every day thinking that the Indiana General Assembly can move the markets, as they say. So we're wasting our time. We couldn't move the markets if we did exactly what Representative Manning wants. And in the meanwhile, we'd lose $6.7 billion from our pension funds.
You think that's what he wants to do, though, is move the markets?
Well, it's the implication. He says we want to change this. Why would do it? We're doing it to change the national economy. We can't do that. All we can do is make a mistake in our economy. It will cost us $6.7 billion over 10 years to make this change.
That's the estimate from legislative budget.
Really from INPERS. They're the source of that estimate. But we've spent, I think, 25 years building up our pension funds, getting nearer to fully funding them. Sometimes we've gone crazy to do that, and now we're going in the other direction for reasons I don't understand.
And that figure you were talking about, the notion is that over a 10-year period, the projection, we'd be looking at five and change percent versus 6 and change percent, right. Presumably because we are not getting the most skilled or most adept money managers.
We pay tens of millions of dollars a year for investment advisors, tens of millions of dollars, okay? And what we're saying is don't let them do their job. Let the General Assembly do the job. Let us decide what investments. We're trying to put our thumb on the scale, okay? Well, when you do that, you help somebody and you hurt somebody. So you might help the coal industry, but you're going to hurt our retirees and our state budget. We pay that money, by the way. These are guaranteed benefits for our people. So we got to pay them those pensions, whether we lose money in the markets or not.
Well, Daniel Elliott, you're new at your job. You've what,
6 weeks.
6 weeks now. At least you know where the light switch is.
I do.
Have the key to the men's room, so that much is good. You ran on this issue, though. I was looking
yes.
at your platform, and there's transparency. There's mm-hmm. all kinds of the more
cybersecurity.
Cybersecurity, the more traditional sorts of talking points or platform mm-hmm. planks. But this was on there. Why did you run on that? Why do you feel compelled that this is an issue that whose time has come?
Well, you know, I'm going to actually agree with Representative Delaney that nobody should be putting their thumb on the scale. I'm a small business owner. I literally, until 6 weeks ago, that's what I've done for the last 15 years. And I believe in the free markets. The problem is right now the free markets are not, there are people putting thumbs on the scales. So for instance, we talk about, obviously we don't want to be putting the thumbs on the scales, but what we have right now are large investment management firms like BlackRock that are putting their thumbs on the scale. So we talked about the numbers, the $6.25 and the $6.7 billion, except for one fact. That was a Red Dawn style of assumption. That was the assumption that every investment manager would walk out the door. Well, I've spoken to those investment managers. They're not walking. In fact, I've spoken to multiple state treasurers, and they were all threatened with those same threats, and none of those investment managers have left. Now, let's go back to the $6.25 million, which is what our investments have been tracking the last 10 years. Interestingly enough, a study out by UCLA and NYU pointed out that when you are using ESG investment funds as your predictor, as your main focus, you end up with about 6.3% return. But if you're using non-factors, just plain pecuniary factors, pecuniary is a big fancy word that says I'm only focusing on the bottom line, then you get an 8.9% return.
Well, you're talking about projections, and that's mm-hmm. fair to say that that's a Red Dawn projection, to use yeah. Your phrase. But let's look at history, because that's a pretty good guide, too. Texas, I think, again, one of the first states to go down this path. And in the first 6 months, there appeared to be an impact of $500 million, $500 million. And that's not a projection.
So that study was funded by a sort of a radical left-wing group, number
University
one.
University of Pennsylvania? Second, Donald Trump's alma mater.
Funded by that group.
But done the by Sunrise the University
Movement.
Of Pennsylvania.
I encourage you to look up the Sunrise Movement. And what they're talking about is exactly what we are doing the opposite of. They say on their website, we will use the financial services markets to eliminate fossil fuels. That is their goals. But second of all, that study was on bonds, which this bill does not pertain to it all. This is only on our pension.
So you think that's an apples to oranges comparison?
Totally separate. Yeah.
All right, Kevin Brenninger, are you trying to get these guys to put a finger on the scale, or what explains your opposition?
Our opposition comes from largely our banking members who don't want to be caught in the middle of all this. And this bill, as it currently stands, we understand there's an amendment coming. Which perhaps Representative Manning will want to talk about.
It's like the second coming that pasted this amendment.
Yeah. It's much
anticipated.
No, I'm not saying that, obviously. But it's highly anticipated, let's say that. But, you know, in Section 8 of the bill and Section 11, and it says the fiduciary shall discharge the duty solely in the financial interest of the participants and benefits of the public pension system for the exclusive purpose of providing financial benefits, defraying reasonable expenses. If the bill stopped there, we'd be fine. And Senator Holdman has a bill that...
There's a Senate version that essentially is a statement of
policy. Yeah, that essentially codifies their policies.
Which we should say NPRS says it already does anyway. I mean,
exactly, yeah. Well, that's why I say it would codify their existing policies, and we would be fine with that. But the conflict or the inconsistency comes from the next section, which lays out all these things that they're not supposed to invest in and have
the specific
to
specific sorts do. Of things with fossil
yeah,
fuels.
And so,
it's important that we define ESG in the bill because it's so subjective. It means different things to different people.
So why are we doing it if it's subjective?
But how?
We have to make it somewhat objective in order to say that we don't want our pension funds to go towards these efforts. And so in the bill, financial return trumps all. So if an ESG fund has the best return, lowest risk, and lowest management cost, we're going to stick with an ESG
so
fund.
Even
and
if
we
these
don't believe
are
that's what the bill says.
Let's say that. Well, if you look at the list, you know, it tends to be the Apples and Microsofts and green industries tend to be at the top of the list, although there are some
and the bill
Cummins engine is number two.
The bill
two.
Doesn't speak to those individual companies. It talks about what investment managers are doing with other people's money to push these companies towards these
so
policies.
If an ESG, but here's the, what I'm confused about. So if, and again, amendment may change the wording here, but if an Indiana-based investment house or bank markets, produces, offers ESG funds, under the bill as originally filed, it doesn't matter if the ESG return is 100% better than something else. They can't you can't do business with them. Isn't that right?
No, that's not right. We can absolutely do business with them because the treasurer of state under the bill would possibly point to a bank or an investment manager and say, you're violating this. That information goes to the NPERS board, and they make the final decision based upon their
existing fiduciary obligations. Okay, but you're talking about whether it's enforceable. But theoretically, if you read the letter of the law, that bank would be in that would be persona non grata in terms of the state's eyes. No,
not if they have the highest return, lowest risk, and lowest management.
It doesn't say that. It makes it clear that unless they profess your creed of investing, they can't advise. Period. And even if they advise a different company or a different state about being environmentally sensitive, we can't use them. That's the way your bill reads. I'm sorry.
No,
by the way, you know what you've done.
About our pension system, by definition.
You know what you've done? It absolutely amazes me. I'm sitting next to Kevin Vinegar. Think about that. The Democrat is sitting next to the head of the Chamber of Commerce. What has happened to you people? I'm serious about
it. You're reading too much into our seating arrangement.
But
nevertheless, the point's well taken.
And our folks are concerned we don't read it the way you just explained. That's what our bankers say.
Well, and I think something we need to recognize. That's where there's clarifications that can be made, clarifications that are being made. No, we haven't read it that way. Our office hasn't read that way. I've had our attorneys look through it. The legislators themselves have not read it that way. I've had multiple other attorneys look at it that way. In fact, most of the people who are reading it this way are folks like BlackRock who are going to these public retirement systems and saying, oh, this is what this means. You need to be afraid of this. And that's what scares me. You mentioned earlier, who's asking these questions? Well, I've been in local government for 10 years. I didn't even know about this issue till I started to run for treasurer. And I first found out about this by a local gun shop, a very well-respected organization. Then all of a sudden, I started getting emails, texts, everything. Because what we're seeing is businesses that are being told by larger businesses and sometimes banks, we won't do business with you because we don't like who you are. We don't like ag businesses. We don't like petroleum businesses. We don't like gun businesses. So when you start to look at that, you say, wait a minute.
So many questions I want to ask. Could it be, though, that an investment house or an advisor is saying, I'm looking at societal trends, I'm looking at market demand, and fossil fuels, look at Indiana utilities, publicly held utilities. They wanted to essentially move away from fossil fuels because of market forces, largely.
And that's a great
And it was
question.
The General Assembly that slowed them down. So,
but see, now I will say this. You know, I wonder that. I'm new here. I don't have the experience of somebody like Representative Delaney. I am new on this on the board, so to speak. But what I have done is been doing my research. And if you start looking, if you're looking at the market dictates that focusing on the bottom line, those types of companies, tend to not be focusing on ESG-related funds. Those that are tend to be doing poorer. BlackRock itself had 24% less earnings last year, and that's because they specifically focus on 28% of their stocks in tech. And I'm a tech guy. I love tech. But they also have
any investment house that didn't see a 25% loss last year.
But here's the opposite side of that. They had very minimal investment in energy. And energy is
BlackRock.
Cheap energy. Yeah,
BlackRock has billions of dollars in oil.
But they have trillions.
I hate them for it.
But they have trillions of dollars overall. They have trillions of dollars overall.
You guys are going to be on the same side, too. Could you switch places?
No, that's not going to happen.
Getting back to the interpretation, BlackRock's not a member of ours. The members that we're hearing from are banks, and the Bankers Association, our friends there, who are concerned and opposed because of what's laid out in Section 9. And if the goal is, and I believe it is, what I just read in Section 8, why not stop there? Because the investors will have to take into consideration the things that are in Section 9 in order to maximize the returns and minimize the risk for the pension.
So could I address your point, though, that you made? And you said, well, the folks from the Indiana Bankers Association and bankers, while the lobbying arm, yes, they're opposed to this. I have spoken
to multiple individual banking members of ours.
I have too. I've spoken to multiple banking presidents.
What state am I in? We're not investing in ag in this state. What state am I in? Is our pension fund doing this? It's not even accused of doing it.
Let me ask this. A lot of times there's a difference of opinion about how to interpret legislation. Yeah. Let's say, theoretically, this is enacted as is, and there's a dispute over what it means. That means it goes to litigation. It's in court.
No,
and
it goes to the state treasurer first.
I'm just trying to get to this question here, and that is courts look at legislative intent. Oftentimes, that's how the first line of defense. We happen to have the author of the bill here, so let's make clear: what is your legislative intent? What he's worried about, or are you saying here and now, so the courts can come back and look at the subpoena this transcript? You have no intention of knocking out Indiana banks or anybody's banks or investment houses that do have market ESG funds, as long as those funds are kicking butt and beating everything else. Is that your intent?
My intent would be, if there are good alternatives, we should not be doing business with banks or asset managers who discriminate based on the factors we have in the bill. But if for some reason they're the only people who are capable of doing this to provide the highest return, lowest risk, lowest management fees, we can stick with them. That's what the bill says right now.
If you had a bank, let's say that's in coal country in Indiana, and said, we want to set up a fund to help our investors, our customer base, so we're going to invest heavily in fossil fuels, and we have a lot of gun ownership here, Second Amendment territory. Mm-hmm. We're going to invest in arms manufacturers.
Yep.
We're going to do that, and we're going to have a fund, call it what you will. I don't know. You can probably come up, work on an
The Ed Delaney Fund.
The Ed Delaney Fund. I don't know if you.
Yeah.
Would you have a problem with that?
Absolutely not.
Ethan, you're talking about discriminating. That's all these people do is decide which investments to make. They're in the business of discriminating.
But wait a minute.
Stick to the financial metrics. That's the key.
But I'm really confused. If that fund, though, didn't perform well, would you care? I mean,
if it didn't perform well, we wouldn't do business with them, right? Because we still have the fiduciary obligation.
So the market takes care of that. Doesn't perform well, our pension is not market based.
It's based on social, political,
ideological. But you inherently don't have an. You wouldn't have an issue if the Ed Delaney Fund that some Indiana banks and Hoosiers invested in supported causes that are near and dear to your heart. That's okay with you. I mean,
if it doesn't do well, we shouldn't invest in that fund, right?
Well, but that's tipping the scales. This whole notion of tipping the scales, though, isn't that what state government and federal government, government of all kinds do? We look at tax policy. Mm-hmm. Tax policy is written to encourage home ownership. It's written to enable families to send their kids to school. It's in Indiana, you get tax credits for winterizing your home, or it used to be for electric vehicle. I mean, we do a lot of things as government. You do a lot of things as government to influence decision making.
Is that inherently bad? The future of a particular industry is not the job of our pension fund. The future of our Hoosiers who are retired, that's their job. The current system allows them to focus on that. If in the end the industries change, that's somebody else's problem. We can't move the national economy. Our pension funds are not designed to change the economy. They're designed to take care of our pensioners. It's really just that simple.
If they in fact did shy away from ESG, if they have their interpretation of the bill is what Kevin Brenniger and you think it is, and they shy away and the return is less, are they then liable for reaching their fiduciary trust?
I have a fiduciary duty to help my pensioners, and I'm not going to abdicate it because some group, ALEC or whatever, doesn't like it.
That's a national group that does a lot of concerns.
So we'll protect the pensioners by not artificially limiting investment options, which is what ESG is doing. Give you a real world example. We have an energy company diversified in the state of Indiana. One of their operations is a coal mine. They used to do business with about six banks, big banks for their revolving fund. They have a market cap in the billions of dollars, great balance sheet, very low debt, lots of cash. This is a company you would want to do business with. When they started to do their new revolver, four of those six banks dropped them, not because they're not creditworthy or a good business, simply because they're a coal company. That's discrimination. That's boycotting. That's what we're trying to avoid.
It's not a boycott. It's a bad investment.
It's a long-term bad investment
if you look simply at the financial factors.
But you're going to tell the bank how to decide to invest?
Let's take it
to the next
level.
Who to loan to? You want to tell Kevin Redinger who you should loan to?
Coal prices are about four times what they were 18 to 24 months ago. We saw headlines last year, Indiana ratepayers paying 15 to 18% more on their utility bills because of fuel adjustment prices, right? So you can draw a direct line from ESG boycotts to higher energy prices for Hoosiers right now.
What's the tangible harm here? If this were, let's go again, amendment process may change, render this moot. But that interpretation, that bill as it stands now, if it were enacted, your membership, what do they say is going to happen? Do they lose business? Do they have to leave the state? I mean, let me point to a couple of examples. Cummins Engine Company, which is on the Dow list, Dow Jones has a subsidiary, that tracks 6,000 publicly traded companies annually about their ESG commitments. Mm-hmm. Cummins Engine Company, which is a diesel engine maker, is number two. I think it's behind Apple or Microsoft, which is, I presume, quite an accomplishment in many sectors.
And they're doing
Eli Lilly's
well.
In the top 60. They've invested in this. They see this as a good way of doing business.
Yeah, they see hydrogen is the fuel of the future.
But are people going to leave? What do they tell you they're going to do? Leave the state, or they're just going to hurt them? He talked about the Red Dawn scenario. What do you see it as? What happens if this is enacted?
The concern is that you've got government picking winners and losers, getting involved. The other concern, which we haven't talked about, is that
we're going to talk about it now.
This says the treasurer of state shall enforce this chapter. Now, we like Dan. We endorsed him when he ran for state representative. But it goes on to say that if the treasurer has reasonable cause to believe that the person has engaged in, is engaging in, or is going to get engaged in, so you can get investigated even for things you haven't done yet. In violation of this chapter, then the treasurer can launch an investigation and require records and all this, and make a recommendation and kind of be judge and jury here.
Well, how about that? I mean, since you're the one in the hot seat and you two haven't agreed on what
that's not something the treasurer's office has ever done in the
they
past.
They have 17 employees. They're going to enforce all this.
You're thinking the attorney general should do it, right?
The bill goes on to say
that's a subtle joke for those who follow this closely.
But to your point, John, it goes on to say that if the treasurer thinks they need help, they can ask the attorney general to help.
Who we should point out, Todd Rokita is a very big champion of this.
Let's get beyond this idea of the individuals.
Are you equipped to do that first?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So for one thing, here's the thing. I have some of the most competent employees in state government. I have some folks who are just absolutely amazing. So I have the utmost confidence in my people. Now, the reality is this. Most of this information is made publicly available. We keep talking about something, and today was my first day meeting Representative Delaney. He and I actually agree. Nobody should be putting the thumbs on the scales. I don't think government should. I don't think that big businesses should. But what happens when you have large trillion-dollar corporations who are pushing back and they're saying, here's what we're going to do, and taking the decision away? The person I'm most concerned about is that pensioner. See, I come from a working-class family. I'm the first one in my family to go to college. So when I look at my family, the only way they get by is by a very, very meager pension. So when I look at this, my point is, when I look at this, when I say, we can do this, but the reality is, Somebody has to draw it out to the light so that people can see it.
Well, I'm glad we're trying to do that now, talking about it, bring it to light. So many more questions to ask. Please stick around. I'm just going to, for my own enjoyment, I had a million more questions for you, but unfortunately, we're out of time now. I appreciate your passion and your interest and your knowledge, all of you. Again, my guests have been Republican Representative Ethan Manning of Logansport, Democratic Representative Ed Delaney of Indianapolis, State Treasurer Daniel Elliott, and Kevin Brenniger, President and CEO of the Indiana Chamber of Commerce. Time now for our weekly conversation with Indiana lawmakers commentator Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hanna News Service. And as I've always said, you can't spell Edward D. Feigenbaum, Esquire, without ESG. I had to add the Esquire, otherwise it wouldn't have worked. So I guess I haven't always said that. You know, after that discussion, which, again, I was left with lots of questions, so I guess we could either zero in on some fine points or we can maybe come back and look at a bigger perspective. Take it, you drive. My brain's still spinning. How should we look at this?
Let's fly. Let's go to the 40,000 foot.
Fair enough.
It's interesting that legislators think, you know, quite often that agencies want to drive the system, want to drive the state, fly the state. But agencies really want direction from the legislature. They don't generally operate in a rogue manner. They don't generally try to come up with their own laws. They can't do that. They try to fill in the holes where the legislature has given them the authority. But they want direction, and this is something that could give them direction so that they don't go rogue. But at the same time, you also have certain professions, doctors, lawyers, financial professionals, that have fiduciary responsibilities, they have responsibilities to their professions, and sometimes those conflict with state laws, and they've got to make decisions. You know, we've talked on this show before in years past about some legislators, for example, who are attorneys, and they say that, oh, well, we don't have to fill out the personal financial disclosure and disclose our clients because that's supposed to be confidential, even though any other non-professional would have to disclose those types of things. So there are certain kinds of fiduciary responsibilities to the profession that some of these professionals have that may conflict with the laws, and they're looking for direction.
Is there a way to craft legislation that accomplishes what Ethan Manning wants ostensibly to accomplish and is not open to endless litigation and misinterpretation as people try to say what is ESG, what isn't?
Sure, and I think he's on the right track here, but it's going to be feel-good legislation, I think, in the end. And
that's the amendment we're talking about, probably.
Right. We'll be able to say, okay, this is what we want to do, but it's not going to be mandatory, and if they can justify why they're doing something, that's going to be okay.
And again, that would be similar to what we've seen coming out of the Senate, which seemingly is more palatable to the Bankers Association, we alluded to, and others in the General Assembly. All right, Ed, as always, thank you for your insight. See you next week. Currently, if you're carrying 2 ounces of marijuana, you could be arrested. Is it time for Indiana to loosen its cannabis laws? On the next Indiana Lawmakers. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and on behalf of commentator Ed Feigenbaum, WFYI Public Media, and Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, I thank you for joining us, and I invite you to visit WFYI.org for more Statehouse news. Until next week, take care.